want to make sure no one is under the age of 16, correct? Everybody looks so youthful. I just have to make sure that's true. Okay. And so our speakers are going to be Janice Wade. Again, she's over the Manasseh Ministries. Go ahead, Janice Wade.
I ran a lot of people out. You noticed.
And then we have here Stephen Recklick. And he goes to the Innerbelt Church. And Innerbelt, okay. That's so great. Now, he and his wife, Julie. Is Julie in here? Oh, she's on the floor. That's his wife, Julie, and she sings in the praise team. But Stephen has been teaching Wounded Heart for Men. Again, there's a ladies and a men's class. He's been teaching that for the past 9 years at the Innerbelt, which is off of Page. And so he's been going to the Crossings Church since 2008, and then he mosey on at a church plant at the Innerbelt in 2014. So everyone give Janice and Stephen a round of applause.
Thank you guys for being here. I know this is a tough class, but we appreciate you guys being here.
Yeah, thank you again. So we're going to kind of go over what the Wounded Heart class is all about, the purpose, the structure, the content, and just kind of the...
Stephen. Oh, sorry. And the main reasons of why we give this class at this church and why it's so just integral of making what our DNA of our church is. And so just to kind of give you a little sum up here that the reason for the Wounded Heart class is kind of to bring out this biblical change for a very complex problem. And I use the word sexual trauma because it's not just like, I think sexual or abuse can just seem like one way to you, but it actually has a like wide range of different kinds of things that could happen to you that can create this trauma. And so, and it's also for us to kind of bring a light so that we can be a light to the world. And so that's why we kind of offer this class up. And sexual trauma, it can be in its own class because it has like a lot to do that it ties into our own identity. It runs very deep. And so because of that, like, Satan wants to kind of destroy something that's very beautiful. God intended sex to be a thing that was designed for a man and a woman, but Satan wants to destroy that. He wants to manipulate it. He wants to make it seem something dirty, something disgusting,
perverted.
Something perverted. Yes, yeah. And you know that's his goal is to use that. And our class is kind of here to design to kind of show God. And how he can show up in, through this situation. I think of Wounded Heart, or let me say this. I think of healing as a choice as kind of being like it is like the gateway drug to everything, but it's more like the, like, you know, you finally say, it's like your support group, you're saying what the problem is, you're in the doctor's office and you diagnose the problem. But I see Wounded Heart as being more of the surgery. Because you're diving in head first into a pile of crap. And it's very difficult to go and basically bring up all this crap and that you don't want to go through. And it's very hard. It's very challenging. But it is necessary for you to get well. And it is, you know, because you know that if you get that surgery, it's going to take care of the root causes, the root problems. And really, Wounded Heart is surgery for the spirit. And that's what it entails.
One of the things that Dan Allender says is that the cure feels worse than the disease. And he compares it to like a cancer. And that's what Stephen is talking about. It's like you get diagnosed with a cancer and then you have to go have the surgery. And that surgery is very painful. My best friend had breast cancer. When she had the cancer in her body, it didn't hurt her. Like, she showed it to me. She was pushing on it. Like, I was like, does it hurt? She was like, no, not really. The surgery was terrible. So at times the cure can feel worse than the disease is what we're saying, but it saves your life.
And we know that, and like the truth is, like in Hebrews 4:12, we even do this in our studies, that for the word of God is living and effective, and it's sharper than any double-edged sword, penetrating even separating the soul and spirit. And we know that is necessary, but I don't know, like, how many of us really think to, like, you know, really, oh, I'm gonna cut myself today. But this class, that is what this cut can, that's going to do, is we're going to be diving into our issues. And so the world kind of has their own ways, and Janice was kind of talking about this earlier. The world has its own ways of trying to fix the problem, coming up with some kind of new, oh, here's the newest thing that you can try. Here's, you know, do this, you can do that. You know, you can try to find these quick and easy answers. And the honesty and the kind of sometimes the sad part about it is the church sometimes even tries to find the quick and easy answer too. And, but we want to make sure, and we bring light to that, God is really the only answer. He is the answer to this very complex problem that leads to this lasting change. And it's not that, you know, the goal is not to get just personal happiness either. That's not the goal. The goal is to bring glory to God, to put him on the throne and be able to use whatever thing that's happened in your life to just, again, glorify him. And there's a quote by Dan Allender that says, change, true biblical healing, occurs when we are wholly dissatisfied with our condition of heart and soul. But more is required than merely the legitimate desire for happiness. We must comprehend that our deepest happiness will be found only in the relationship with our Father. You see, trauma, it wants to get in the way, especially sexual trauma. And it will ruin that deepest desire to have this relationship with God. So we have to trust him. We have to trust the process because it's messy. And this is why this class is so important. Now Janice is going to share with us some of the...
Yeah. Yeah, so again, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but this is like the warning advisory. This is a heavy-hearted class. It really is. And I know people are like, Janice, are you scaring people away? I don't know, but you need to know what you're getting yourself into. There is it's counting the cost. Now, it's God-led. It's biblical. You can trust it, right? But you have to buy into it, and you have to trust the process, like Stefan said. And not only is it a heavy topic, right, but the book is so hard to read. It's there is a scale called readability, right? And so there's these researchers, and they've determined that most books, oh, wonderful, a fan. So most books are on a readability scale of seventh grade, okay? So that's where most books are written at. This is a college-level book. So you're not going to, you know, you kind of go to bookstores and get those, like, self-help books, and they're very readable. This one's not one of them. So it's not impossible, but it's just, it takes study. Does that make sense? It takes some diligence. Like, you're not just going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll read this book and I'll be good. Like, it is a process that you need to be a part of. And so a couple of prerequisites, again, is 18 and over. And also a minimum of four people. I know that people are like, oh, but if I only have two. And I'm talking with the leader. So the leader always takes it, right? So it's me and three people. Or me and a co-leader and two people. That's the minimum. The reason why is, like I said, there is a community healing that needs to happen. And it's so special with the topic like sexual abuse. You really connect with people. Now, a lot of people ask me, well, what if we start with four people and then one person quits? Finish the group. Now, I have had groups where they all quit. Okay, they did. And I was by myself, so I didn't have the class. But but yeah, so minimum four. And then they need some foundational counseling or healing as a choice first, okay? Now, look, am I going to kick you out of the church if you let somebody in your group, you know, that didn't have counseling or anything in the church? No. But you will come back and be like, I wish I listened, because it's a whole new language. It's a whole new way. It's a paradigm shift, if you guys know what that is. I mean, it is a complete restructuring in how you think about trauma and your healing and your needs. So.
Okay. And along with that, too, like, the class is primarily for, men and women, you know, and men obviously take the Wounded Heart for men, women take that. But we notice in the Advocacy Center for Assault, they did a study, and this is for by the time that They are 18 years old. One in five men will have admitted to sexual trauma, and then one in three females have admitted that they've encountered some form of sexual trauma. And that's for the people that are saying it. But, like, what about the people that don't? I mean, the number could even be greater. And, like, I think the commonality that I see among men is that is just not something that you go around saying. This is not something that we share. Men have a hard time with just expressing their thoughts and feelings, even harder to just say something that can be so soul-wrenching that makes you feel extremely vile, shameful,
and isolated.
Yeah. That you just don't say those things out loud. Yeah. And so,
and Stephen, who did you first tell, a male or a female, when you first told?
Yeah. The first person I opened up to was a woman.
That's common. A lot of men will feel more comfortable sharing with a woman. Does anybody hazard a guess why? I'm sorry? They're typically the men are the abusers. Women can be abusers too. I've seen it. But men typically are the abusers. So when a man is abused by a man, which is the most common, right, they're not going to feel comfortable opening up to a man. And plus, right, manhood, masculinity, all those things are called into question, so they feel more comfortable opening to a female. But it is important that men, that's why it's important to have a group. Do you understand? They get to connect with men.
Yeah, absolutely. You're up next.
So what constitutes a sexual abuse? That's a tough question. I'm not going to answer it fully in here. It's a hard question, and it you need to get guidance and prayer, right? But first of all, what makes it hard is there's varying levels of sexual abuse. There's least severe. Dan Allender calls it least severe to very severe, but there is a spectrum, right? And there's lots of variables that are part of what makes it, you know, a different levels of severity. The most common ones are age of, right, the abused, you know, younger, right? The relationship or role of the perpetrator. You don't have to just be related to them. So that's why I said role. It can be a babysitter. It can be a teacher. You know, it could be a police officer. It could, you know, somebody that's a role in your life of authority. Depends on how close you are. Biological dad, right, is going to lend to some more severity. And then the type of touch or assault, that is part of the variable too, because not all sexual abuse, right, is touch. And that's really hard. It's hard already to say, well, he just touched my boob, or, you know, he didn't touch, you know what I mean? Like, we minimize it anyway, but sometimes we just minimize even touch. But when we're talking psychological sexual interaction, verbal sexual interaction, visual sexual interaction, I mean, we're just like, well, no, I wasn't abused, but they exposed me to pornography. They never touched me, though. Do you see that? That's just hard. And then we're aroused by pornography, so then we blame ourselves, and we're not a victim. Make sense? So it's just a tough question. So the main thing that we wanted to say here, and this is what Dan Allender says in the book, the fact that sexual abuse can be so subtle ought not to cloud our perspective that it can be equally abusive and damaging. We already minimize it. Like, I'll be in class. This is in the Wounded Heart class, like in my basement. And I'll say, okay, ladies, thanks for coming. So who here has been sexually abused? And it's like nobody raises their hand. And I'm like, what, do you know what this class is for? Like, no, I don't say that. But a lot of, or they'll do one of these, you know, one of those things. They have been, right? But that's part, and I do that on purpose because it shows how we minimize the damage. And sometimes we minimize it because we think we're to blame. We think we're the perpetrator and the victim. Okay, so anytime, though, we're used for sexual gratification in any way, right? Visually, somebody can be sexually gratified, right? Psychologically, controlling. If we're used in any way for somebody else's sexual gratification, we are objectified, right? We're used as an object. We are no longer a person, and that damages our soul. It doesn't have to involve touch. But when it doesn't, just anytime, honestly, it's really hard to clearly define. So we have to be careful, especially as leaders, okay? Not to just dismiss it. Please prayerfully consider it. Please get some guidance. You know, speak to your leaders. Call me, you know, whoever you trust, and get some guidance on it. We don't want further harm. Does that make sense? Okay.
And thank you, Janice. And so now I'm going to talk a little bit of some of the content that's kind of given throughout the class. And it's just kind of helps us to understand what's going on. They start off with talking just about memory and how memory can be such a tricky thing to kind of understand. Be like, what did that actually really happen to me? You know, like you might have like this kind of fuzzy, foggy memory about something happening, but you can't really put your finger on it. And like Dan Allender just goes through countless examples of how people like, yeah, you know, I had this, you know, is it a dream? Is it, you know, like they can't really tell sometimes. But I think it's really important that it's in archaeology, they would study fossils. And there's two kinds of fossils that you could have. You have casts and you have molds. Well, a cast and a mold, they leave behind impressions of what was there. And I think that's the whole point, is that there are impressions that are left behind, just like in a fossil, of sexual trauma, of sexual abuse, that can be an indicator of, oh yeah, maybe this is something that has happened to me. I think that's more evident than just being like, oh, I remember exactly every single thing that happened to me. Because the truth
that's
is
rare.
You won't. Like, you're not going to know every little detail that happened to you. But you're going to have these things that are going to be continuously to show up. And along those lines, there is also secondary symptoms. And this makes it even more clear and more obvious for people around you to be like, and especially maybe if you don't even have sexual abuse, but you can start to kind of notice that there is something that something's up, you know? I don't know, I can't put my finger on it, but there are indicators that let somebody know, like, yeah, maybe sexual abuse could be a potential problem here. And those kinds of things could be symptoms like depression, sexual dysfunction, addiction and compulsions, eating disorders, physical complaints, which could then connect to mental, like a mental kind of issues there, low self-esteem, and even self-destructiveness. So these are like all signs that you could tell, like within people within your own small groups, and be like, hey, have you ever considered that this may have happened? You know, that could be an indicator. And I think it's wise for you to, you know, to talk it out with leaders and find the best path for you. Obviously, maybe pointing people towards healing is a choice first, and then going for there.
And you can ask, if you're uncomfortable saying, have you been sexually abused, you know, you can just say, hey, you know, I've noticed some patterns, like, tell me about your hurts. Just tell me about your past. If, you know, and as you get comfortable with me or trust me, just be curious and loving. Does that make sense? You don't have to be like, meh, sexual abuse. You know, even though, yes, sometimes I think it, I have a bad habit of going, oh, like diagnosing everybody, but I try not to speak it out loud. But just gently be like, hey, I'm, you know, this is what I've noticed. Tell me about yourself. Like, have you been hurt? And, you know, the more people feel comfortable, they'll open up. But, yeah.
But it's really helpful for the wounded heart to see those things. And we have a workbook, and it helps you to start, you know, jumping into like these questions that you get to ask yourself, like, do you do this? Do you do that? You know, like, and like, and you start to get paint a picture for, you know, who you are, you know, of the things that you've done that indicate this. And it actually helps as you're going through the class. I think more times than not, things start to jump back to the surface of your memory that I've noticed. Maybe like, you know what, I wasn't thinking about it in that way, but now that I am, like, man, there's some real grooming that happened in that situation. Or, you know, the relationships with your mother and father could be like, whoa, I didn't realize that was what was going on. And it could have been subtle. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So also there's different stages of abuse that it talks about in the book. And they talk about like an environment, a setting that like some people want to think that like abuse just kind of comes out of nowhere, comes out of left field. Well, I don't know. Like it's just, it just happened to me. I guess like I just have some like little curse or evil curse on myself that I just bring about this, that this sexual abuse just continues to happen to me over and over again. That is not
people
by chance.
I have a sign on my forehead that says abuse me. I hear that a lot. Yeah.
And that's not true at all. Dan Allender says that abuse doesn't occur in a vacuum. There are certain conditions that breed sexual trauma and abuse. That you're in a
vulnerable.
You're in a place that is where it's happening. Mm-hmm. That it's setting it up. Mm-hmm. So it's important, I think, to discuss these stages because understanding the setup frees the abused person from unnecessary guilt. A lot of times we want to take on that guilt. Like, oh, it's my fault. I'm the reason why this all happened to me. No, that's not true. But it offers understanding for events that are very confusing for the sexual abused person. It also brings, in the book, it talks about these typical feelings that come up, shame and contempt and powerlessness, ambivalence and betrayal. These are all fruits that kind of come out of being abused. Like that's it's almost default for me to feel shame. It's default for me to feel ambivalence about certain things for sex. I didn't mean to talk about this, but even like getting, like when I first got married, I could not have sex normally. And I was like, what is wrong with me? I even had to go see a doctor about it. What's going on? Man, there's just so much trauma. There was so much like messed up, like, you know, pornography addiction in the past, all these things that were playing a part with me to have like the gift of sex the way God designed it. And I had all this baggage. And I think it's so important to jump into those things and see what does God have to say about each one of these things? What's the truth behind shame? What does God feel about this? You know, what does God feel about ambivalence? You know, in James 1:19, it says, you know, he doesn't shift like shadows, right? God is, he is yes and no. He is ambiguous, but he does not shift.
He's faithful.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's offered up in the class to dive into those things. And it's not always fun to talk about it or to, like, you know, you might find yourself, you know, oh, powerlessness. That's me. Like, I want to have control. I want power over things. But it's so necessary for us to understand these things. The book even talks about styles of relating. And these are kind of the ways of us offering ourselves to other people or protecting ourselves towards other people. It's how we relate to others, how we are think we're perceiving to other people. Like for the girls and guys, it's different, but there's some similarities there. Like, you know, there's the good girl who wants to be good to everybody around them. And then on the same
the perfectionist.
Yes. And then the same side, the nice boy, right? That he wants to be the good boy, the hero, the, you know, almost like a
doesn't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Right.
But and, really angry deep down inside.
Yeah. And then we have like the party girl, you know, who gives herself over to sensuality.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, we have the Don Juan, the smooth talker, seductive kind of guy. And these are like, those are some of them. And then another one is like the tough girl, that hard shell exterior that they put everybody at an arm's length, not letting anybody in. And same thing with the macho boy. It's all a front to be macho, to, you know, like I'm going to be the manliest man I can possibly be. And that's it, you know, but the way we treat God and others is a clue.
Yeah, it's a huge indicator.
To how we really feel about God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really cool exercise they do in the book. It's called How Do Others Experience Me, that we give to other people. And you're like, you have to give like three things to like the people that, you know, who knows you the best. And they write down a list of things. Are they like a check marks? Do you do this? Do they do this? And it's not always fun to receive those back. And you're like, I don't think I have that problem. Are you sure? Like, no, you do. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Well, that's how they see you anyway, right?
Yeah. But it's revealing. And it helps you to go back and be like, how do I mean, it's important to see how others see me because they might be missing something about how I perceive myself. But the end all is to get back to the repentance and that love and that bold love. You know, we need to repent from our own issues, the things that we've decided to do, the addictions and all the compulsions and the dysfunction that's there. We have to repent from those things. But what's really cool
not
is
the abuse.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, correct. Not the abuse.
Right.
But the things that we act on.
Yeah.
And we need to choose to have bold love. And that's one of the hardest lessons to learn at the end of the book is getting to choose to forgive our perpetrators. You have that choice. You have the choice to take some risks to let go of some of the things that hold so tightly that kind of like keep you paralyzed in this state. Yeah. And it helps you to kind of like escape that. It resurrects
it's
your
life.
It's
where the peace is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you get your peace. It's a long journey, though.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going to take the class once and be like, I'm fixed.
Yeah.
So, but it's the beginning, honestly. Yeah.
And so along with that, I think that like for someone to take this class, obviously Janice was saying it earlier, like the leaders have to have that kind of background. And I do as well. And kind of my testimony, I was sexually abused when I around 8 years old by a male, kind of like an 18-year-old, I can't even remember, maybe 17. He was my babysitter that my mom and dad had me, like, you know, had watch over me. And this was just like a confident, kind of trusted individual within the neighborhood that my parents just trusted. And I remember that. Like, I had this desire. I was getting around the age of liking girls. So I had this desire to want to, like, learn how to get girls to like me. And I confessed that to this individual. And they took that and they twisted it and they manipulated it. And they would dress up as a woman and kind of manipulated me into, like, a simulated sex that was, like, supposed to teach me how to have sex with a girl. At 8 years old, which is so messed up. And like coming back to think about it, I was like, I clearly was not, and I like put guilt on myself. That's why I never even said anything to my parents. I was like, this is my fault. Like I got to keep it a secret. And the perpetrator even told me like, okay, hey, I'll give you a popsicle. Just don't tell your parents. Like it was even bought in. Like that was even one of the stages of abuse that just shows up. Secrecy and threats or even
privileges.
Yeah. That he would give me. And, but not only that, but it even carried on into high school where I was, and this one's even harder for me to say, like there was that oral sex was a part of by another male, and it was a domineering male that would happen while I was just driving the car, and there was this manipulation in there, and that one is even more shameful for me. I was like, I'm even older now, why, like what's wrong with me, like shouldn't I have the brain to like tell them no, hey, what are you doing, that stop that. And it's just like, it was just like, is there something broken in me? Is there something wrong with me that I keep on bringing about these same kind of people in my life that are just around me all the time? And it's, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, like, I think that again, like I was saying earlier, cultivate the conditions were kind of set. And this is crazy. But even when I got to college, that person was my roommate. And I was just like, and what?
So crazy.
We had a bunk bed, and every night, this person would masturbate, and they would kick me, kick the bunk bed, and just to hear me say something, to hear me say stop, or you hear me say like all these things, and just it was like this power trip thing that this person had, and so it's just like I could look back and be like, man, what is wrong with me? But the fact is that God never wanted those things to happen. It's the evil desires of human nature, of sin, of demonic presences in people's lives. And that's not my fault. I know that now. But it's like I get to choose to share this story, even how hard it is to share something like this, and see other people be changed because of a story like that. So, go ahead.
Yeah, please. And thank you, Stephan. And like I said, it's very hard for men to speak. It's hard for anybody to speak it, but I think in this culture, women, it's more normalized for women to talk about it. And as much as, you know, people say women aren't believed, men are not believed about sexual abuse, period. I mean, who's the one actor that does America's Got Talent? Big guy. Yeah, Terry Crews. He came out about his abuse and people like made fun of him. And I'm like, what? You know, and they're like, oh, you're this big guy. Why didn't you just punch him in the face? He was like, you don't think like that. That's not what happens. You know, you're with your wife and this happens. You get assaulted and you're like, you're in shock. And people didn't believe him and they made fun of him. Thank you, Stefan, for being so open. I know that's really difficult, but that's, you know, he's had some healing so that he can pass that on. And whatever your story is, you're not alone. My story is my abuser was my biological dad. And like I said, by the time I was 2.5 years old, I was terrified of him. My first abuse memory was my dad asking me to perform oral sex on him, and I was 4. And I knew what it was. So I'm like, there's something wrong with that, you know. And I can't remember the words he used, but I knew what he wanted. And he would just come into my bedroom, the shower. There was no privacy, and I was constantly scared. So even when he wasn't actively abusing me, I was always looking over my shoulder, always, because there was no safety in my life anywhere. And that's why I honestly... I think part of my outgoing personality is I got out of the house and I would rather be in anybody else's home than my own home. And again, it continued until I was 11 and then it stopped. I'm not really sure why. I did tell him no, but at 11 I did start my menstrual cycle. So I don't know if that was part of it or maybe because I finally spoke up, my dad was scared that I was going to tell. Right now I'm starting to use my words. But even after that, once it stopped with me, I walked in on him abusing my sister and my younger sister. She's 4 years younger than me, and I didn't do anything. I just hung my head. I acted like I didn't see it, and I walked out of the room. And that has probably caused me more guilt than anything. And I think it leads to a lot of my hypervigilance. I will stand up for anybody at any time. Like, I'm not scared of anything, but I think it's like a reaction of that because I felt for years, you know, that I didn't protect my little sister. Now, it's not my job as an 11-year-old to protect her, right? But that's the kind of blame that we do. You know, and when you feel like you can do nothing about it, you have that mixture of I'm powerless to stop this, yet I should have stopped it. So you feel like you have all the responsibility and none of the power. It's a terrible feeling. So how does Wounded Heart in particular help make disciples? And it's the same general stuff I talked about with the healing class, if you were in here, but specifically to Wounded Heart. When you invite somebody to this class, again, you might want to invite them to Healings of Choice first, but you have a way to connect to them that not everybody else can, right? That you're going to have that. And if you've taken the class, if you are a Wounded Heart, you kind of see it in people. Like, you kind of know. You're like, do. You know, you have this Wounded Heart radar. And you're kind of like, I wonder. Because you know, what is it? Game recognizes game or whatever. That's it. You recognize yourself. And so be gentle with them. But it's okay to love them and ask questions. But it's just... It's like this terrible thing. It's almost like, oh, I have a curse. But it's like so beautiful that I get to be a part of seeing that in other people and letting them know they're not alone. That just makes me want to cry because you feel so alone. You know, I didn't tell anybody about my abuse until I was over 20 years old. And when I heard Robert talk about his great-grandfather, I had a panic attack and blurted it out. And then I was like, I'm never going to talk about it again. You know, and that's all I talk about. But, you know, but it was, you know, there's a freedom in being able to say, no, you're not alone in this. You don't have a curse on you. And so you're able to connect with them like no one else can. But also through that healing, they really get to see Christ. Because there's nothing else like it out there. And like I said, people take counseling for trauma so much. And they're just like, they just get stuck. They get to gain an honesty about themselves, a lens to see themselves clearly. And you get to be a part of that. You get to reflect back to them who they truly are. It's just such an honor to be a part of that. It cultivates forgiveness between people in your church, outside of your church. I've shown forgiveness and humility in a workplace where I did really screw up and had to apologize. And my coworker is not a Christian. I think I invited her to study, like, I can't even tell you how many times. I invited her to church a bunch. I really liked her. But I really did something I can't remember. It's a long time ago. But I hurt her feelings, and I spoke out of turn, and I got busted, and I had to apologize to her. And she was not going to forgive me. I mean, she was like, nope, you betrayed me. And I was like, okay. So the way I treated her, though, out of that betrayal, it changed her. And she after weeks, she called me in. She said, I need to tell you something. Like, I know I haven't been kind to you. I was so upset. And I said, I understand. And she goes, but you have been nothing but kind and loving to me. And honestly, I kind of treated you like crap, and I'm sorry. And she goes, but she just told me, she goes, I know you've asked me to study the Bible, and I've said no, but I'll study the Bible with you now. And that's how I got a Bible study going with her. Just because, but can you imagine if I didn't have any healing? I would have been like, screw you too. You know what I mean? Like, we would have squared off at work. You know, because she was mean to me. Like, she was. Like, I kind of could have went to HR about it, you know, but I was like, no. You know, I'm going to trust in God with this. And she was like, your love and patience, like, I don't know what's going on. But, and she did. She got baptized. And I'm like, wow, me being a screw up led her to Christ, you know. But it's not that, is it? It's our response. And it's the way we handle these tough things. So leadership development, again, that's a way to make disciples. The maturity that's, man, you grow so much. But also connecting to other Christians. I didn't even like women. You guys were annoying when I first came around. Everybody was gossipy, I thought, and, you know, competitive. And so I was a tomboy. So I was like with all the guys, but I didn't trust them, right? Like, I kept them like this. But women, I was like, no, not at all. And, you know, and God has taught me how to love people and open up. And man, I have such great relationships. It's not because of me. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, it says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. God loves to use our weaknesses. Don't you hate that? Like, I wish it was strengths. But he does amazing things through them. And it's never been about our strengths. It never will be about our strengths. First of all, we're not that strong. Quit kidding yourself. But, you know, I do wish sometimes I'm like, can't I? Is this what I'm known for? Yes. And the most terrible things give God glory. And you're honored to be a part of it. And some of the most terrible stories are told in Wounded Heart. It's a testimony class to show God's character through you. You get to be like Christ. It's really hard to be like Christ, but this is a way to do it.
Yeah. All right. So again, another part of, you know, making disciples is sharing your story beyond the class. And that is kind of like something that we need to kind of prepare people for. You know, what you learn in the Wounded Heart class needs to be kind of transferred to a small group. Your discipleship groups are kind of like what are supposed to be designed. And we kind of push people to, hey, take that and take a chance. Share your story. Share your hurt with others. Let others be there for you to see you more clearly so you can be there. It just be more transparent. They can see, you know, have all, you know, see your six is what, you know, like I don't know, it says seals say that or something.
Have your back.
Have your back, yeah.
Yeah, your six.
And so they can see you more clearly and they can help you, you know, when you have those times when you feel like I'm reverting back, I'm struggling. You know, like, you need those people in your life. They're supposed to be your closest confidants, and yeah, we want to push those Wounded Heart people who are in that class to start sharing their story beyond that. You know, I would have gone to the grave and not told anybody about my story, and I think it's only because of God, and I think it's because of Robert. Robert stood up in front of our church, and he was talking about sexual abuse, and I was like, my first time ever coming to this church. I guarantee you, if he didn't talk about it that day, I don't think I would be here. Because I, at that very moment, I saw somebody who was real. I'm like, oh, so this is the place we're going to be real. Oh, okay, like, this is where I want to be. Like, finally, like someone who's speaking to me. And I think it's so true. Robert said it last night and say it now. If you're not going to, deal with your sufferings, then you could. There are people that you might miss out on heaven because of you not sharing your story and you not doing the things that you need to do. And you know, like think about a broken bone. In order to fix a broken bone, you have to re-break it to fix it and put it back into place. And that's what sharing our stories can feel like, especially for our sexual abuse victims. Yeah. Like, I have to say this again? are you sure, God? Like, I said it enough? No. Like, it's so important because you don't realize the person that you're going to touch, the right. person that's going to get to have that relationship with God. There is potential in a broken story.
Absolutely. I think I'm just going to go on. Is that okay? So, So what are some practical applications, right? Like, how do you bring this to your church? First thing, you need to have the minister, evangelist of your church support it, right? They support it from the pulpit. They promote it. It basically, by the minister or evangelist speaking to it, they're normalizing it, right, for your culture here. Instead of everybody going, what? You know, it's like, it's not just Janice the crazy one going, you need to take this class, you know what I mean? They're like, no, thank you. But like Robert, he promotes that and supports the leaders, and he supports the idea that this is, you know, part of it's our culture. It is our culture here, absolutely. Like people walk in and they're like, there's something different. I'm telling you guys, Manasseh is a big part of what makes us different. Establish a ministry fair, right? That they, you know, put the classes out there. I do have a list of like leadership requirements that I can forward to you if you'd want. But just kind of get a ministry fair together, kind of have a leadership requirement, you know, have a sign up sheet. You know, our sign up sheets aren't like a sheet like this. We have little strips of paper that people can put their name on, fold and put in a little box. You know, some people are more, I don't care, who knows. Other people are like, nope. So keep those things in mind. Wounded Heart meets in homes. It just does. I've tried it in different things. It didn't ruin it. But you really need a cozy environment. You've got 8 people at the most. Now, in our church here, we have like that little couch fireplace area. Okay, that's fine if you know for sure no one's coming and gonna knock on the door and interrupt. If you do have it in the church, put signage up, make sure everybody knows. Like, you just really wanna protect people, and you want them, you don't want barriers. There's already enough barriers. So I would suggest have it in homes. And it doesn't have to be the leader's home. I've had different members go, can we have it at my house? And I'm like, absolutely. You know, there's no kids, and, you know, they love that. They love to be a part of it. Just really create a welcoming environment. One of the things that I do, some people in here are going to attest to, I'm like, wear your pajamas if you want. I don't care. And people do. They wear their pajamas. Bring your blankie. You know, I've had somebody bring a stuffed animal. I'm like, I don't care. Whatever you're comfortable with. You know, I do provide snacks, but I'm going to be honest with you. Most people just bring their own. They're like, I got my Dr. Pepper and I got my Skittles. I'm good. You know, like just everybody. And it's just the way it is. Have plenty of Kleenexes. You also want to have a confidentiality, right, that informed consent at the beginning. And there is a way to handle if that's broken. We have a process for all of this. So, you know, there's a way to handle if somebody breaks confidentiality. It's gracious, but there's some boundaries. Yep, I'm wrapping up. Thank you. So let's see. The blessings are the outcomes. I just want to make sure I have time for questions afterwards. But man, so many blessings. Oh my gosh. To me personally, like I've already attested to, I'm just a different person. You guys don't know me. I'm 35 years into this. People are like, oh, Janice. I'm like, nope. The first 15 years of my walk with Christ, I was terrible. People did not like me. They did not know what to do with me. I was trouble all the time. I didn't care that Robert spoke from the pulpit. I was like, shut your mouth. I don't care. Like, I was not a good relational person. I mean, I got better after about 5 years, but it was 15 years of struggle. I've been going to counseling and dealing with this since I was 21 years old. So I don't want anybody to think, oh, I'm going to go to Wounded Heart and come out ding, like Janice. Nope. I think you'll grow faster than me, right? But I always tell people, this is 35 years. You've been doing this, what, five? You're doing great. You know, so just keep that in mind. But just my personal growth, I like who I am. I can't even believe I'm saying that. I never liked myself. I like me. I'm not great. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I get that. But this is who I am. Healthy marriages and families. I know a woman. She was such the nice Christian woman. Really a Christian woman. And you know those nice, nice Christian women? Yeah, I don't trust them either. But anyway, she was so sweet. And she literally took my class and became like, I think the devil came out. I was just like, oh my gosh, who is this? She was cussing at me and yelling at me. And I'm like, I have to perform an exorcism. Like, I was just like, what's happening? But that fear and that trauma took a hold of her. And she buried it so deep that when we started uncovering it, she was like, blah, like it came out. But let me tell you, at the end of this class, and she was like, I'm never telling anybody. I was like, you don't have to. That's the first thing. You don't have to tell anybody. I never say that to anyone. I never make you tell anyone. But literally the next week, she's like, I told my son and my husband and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay. Then her husband had been a secret alcoholic in the church for 20 plus years. 20 plus years. He ended up trying to commit suicide, went to the hospital, all in the class. And it was just, I mean, I was like, Lord Jesus, I'm in way over my head. I had no idea. At the end of it, they are still married. She tells her story. She is authentic. Her husband has been clean and sober for 20 years now. They have a wonderful marriage. And I'm like, that ain't me. That wasn't me at all. But that's what you get to see. You see miracles happen. And I don't know if you feel this way, but at the beginning of every class, I'm like, I don't know if I know what I'm doing. Is this going to work? I don't know. But I know that feeling is so comfortable, I just ignore it because I just trust God and I trust the program. And it happens. It happens. And I just get to be like, yay, you know, healthy sense of identity in God. You develop ministry leaders and maturity. You get to care for the lost in such a special way. You get to grieve for the perpetrator. Nobody does that. People even ask me, Janice, do you see perpetrators? I'm like, yeah, I see them for counseling. They're like, oh, how? This is how. Me getting through this class, do you think I could counsel a perpetrator? If I wasn't healed from this, no way. It gives, above all, it gives a true sense of purpose. And one of the things that Satan steals from us through trauma is we don't feel like we have a purpose. We don't feel like we belong. We're broken people, and we are nothing. That's what we think. We are nothing. We're worse than nothing. It's not true. So the comfort that I've been given, I get to give to other people. And so can you.
Cool. And I'm just going to wanted to talk about one more thing here as kind of close out and get ready for questions is that, like, they give an illustration of what it could be, of what life could be when you do choose to put God on that throne, when you do choose to start tackling some of these things, is that Dan Allender describes it as this, like, willow tree that provides like shelter and support for everything around it. And before, that wasn't even a willow tree. It was just this broken, dead tree that just diseased and it was falling apart. But the goal is that God wants us to be something that we can share out this experience, our abuse with others, and hope. And there's this hope that's created, and it comes from the Proverbs 31:25. It says, hope is becoming like the priceless woman. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she can laugh at the days to come. What an awesome picture of what we can be, that what hope offers, that what this class offers is hope. It's hope for this very, very broken and muddy and disgusting thing that's happened to us. And that's what we are here for.
Yeah, and ultimately we get to make disciples. That's the ultimate blessing to everything. And our regret disappears because of what God does through you. We get to be a part of resurrecting lives. So Okay, any questions? Yes, Lexi.
Oh. 31.
3125.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Me? I know someone who has adult sexual trauma. They're not sure, don't remember any childhood. I know it's a childhood sexual trauma, and that's still included.
Yeah, it can be, for sure. I'm going to be honest, that's super rare. Right. Yeah. So if there's even like a might be, it's a yes. But I have had people that are like, you know, have come through the class for like rape as an adult. I mean, honestly, I just kind of do it by a case-by-case basis. Yeah. I kind of talk to the cell leader, get their recommendation, talk to the person, you know, kind of feel it out. But it can be a fit for sure. But it is pretty rare. Yeah. Yeah.
So we've had dedicated, very strong Christians for decades take this class and then have years of fallout, like big fallout, like don't recognize them as a Christian believer anymore.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like, I don't know if I want God anymore in my life. And they're like dedicated forever.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that is a tough one. Yeah, so, I mean, honestly, it makes me wonder if they were putting on a front. I mean, I don't know them. I'm not accusing them, right? But you get deeper with God. Now, I understand anger at God, for sure. Like, I've struggled with that all throughout my 35 years. It's probably the last 10 years have been much better, but that's a very up and down thing. That's not a problem. That's pretty normal. But to like just fully bail and become a different person, that makes me think, that's who they were to begin with. Right? It's like it reveals their character. That's my first thought. Yeah, but that's why I let people know this is tough. Count the cost. Yeah. Somebody? Oh, yeah. Read the book. That's right. And then as a male, do you want to maybe speak to that? But I'd say read the book for sure.
How do you support someone who's...
Like if he's supporting somebody in the class.
Supporting someone who's like actively like in the class.
And the other person doesn't fully get it or understand. Is that what you're saying? And they want to support them?
Well, I mean
I'm wounded heart.
Oh, okay.
As like supporting someone who's like in the class actively and maybe... Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I would meet with them and get with them and just be like, hey, like, let's talk about things, you know? Mm-hmm. If you have that kind of relationship with that person,
yeah,
and they're comfortable with talking to you about those things, and yeah, or just being like someone to listen, you know, like Janice, I don't know if you've ever heard my story before, but I was telling her today and just her confirmation, and she goes, oh man, that sucks. Oh my gosh. She was like, just like,
he put least severe, and I was like, no, Stefan, that's not least severe. I was like, dude.
But it just was like, so yeah, it was nourishment for my soul.
Yeah.
There was confirmation that I was just like, oh, I'm not crazy. Mm-mm. Like,
you know what I mean? Like just being there for someone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and if you are wounded heart, you know, you have a way to connect with them. But lots of grace, lots of patience. Don't try to fix them. Oh, my gosh, that's terrible. You'll get hit. You'll get throat punched. So, yeah, don't fix them. Don't fix them. Let God fix them. But you can challenge them. You know what I mean? There's a difference. Like to lovingly hold them accountable, but don't try to fix them. Yeah. Anybody? Yeah. I think it does depend on the person. I think either or is fine. I mean, anytime somebody wants to get counseling, you know, Christian counseling, I'm like, yeah, go for it. You know, healing is a choice. What makes it different, though, it's a group dynamic. So it's like it prepares them for that next step of talking about it in a group. But if they are in counseling, I'll literally ask him, so what does your counselor think about you taking this? Have you talked to them? Because some counselors will be like, nope, you're not ready. And I don't know, I would trust them. Did that answer that? Okay. Anybody else? Kayla, were you going to ask something? You moved. Were you going to ask something? Okay. Anybody else? Marcus? Can you, nice and loud for me? Yeah, well, I definitely would read the book, but also a great tactic is to look at them and say, how can I support you in this? What do you need from me? And they may say, I don't know, right? They say, that's okay. You don't have to know right now, but when you think of something, make sure you come and tell me. Yeah, because I don't know is a big, adults say that all the time. You ever notice that? They'll be like, oh, I don't know. And then they talk about it. Yeah, that's in counseling. I'm like, I'll ask a question. I'm like, I don't know. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and I'm like, okay. So, but it's okay. I don't knows are okay. Usually what I don't know means is they're not ready to put language to it. It's still churning in there. And then the minute you ask them, well, how can I be a support to you? They're like, oh. And they need some time to process that and give language to it. So just be patient and ask them. And then be faithful, right? Don't overcommit. Something I learned a long time ago, trying to save everybody. They'd be like, Janice, can you give me? I'm like, yes, every day. You know what I mean? Well, no. You know, I've learned, I'm like, look, I can get with you once a month. Is that good? You know, they're like, yes, I'll take it. I can give you every other week. I'll take it. So just don't overcommit. Make sure you're faithful and do what you say you're going to do. But yeah, ask.
Be the right giver.
Oh, yeah.
Just so that the person taking the class is not the one.
Driving themselves, yeah. Yes. Yes. I love that. I think that's great. Did you guys hear her give rides to people? Like, that's a way. Like, hey, do you want me to ride with you to class? Do you want me to pick you up and take you home? You can debrief with them afterwards. Sometimes it's a little bit of accountability, right? Like, oh, I got to call Janice and tell her not to get me, you know? So it's some accountability there. I love that. So offer to give rides. Yeah. Yeah, but read the book if you haven't. Ask questions. Be curious. Be invested. Right? You don't have to have the answers. But if you're just along with him going, wow. Like Stephanie told me a story, and I was like, why does he have Lee Severe on this part? You know, about the babysitter? I was like, no, dude, that's maniacal. I was like, ah, that babysitter. And then my first question was he abused, Stephen? That's the first thing I asked him, because I'm like, what 17-year-old would do that? You know, that person was abused. I would put money on it. So just be there, be curious, be loving, be attentive. If you don't know, and if they ask you a direct, first off, if you don't know, don't worry about it, because most people don't ask you a question. They're just quiet, and you feel the need to go and answer it. If they don't ask a question, don't answer it. There's nothing to answer. Just listen. If they're quiet for a long time, say, is there anything else? Are you okay? You know, do you need anything? I'm so sorry. You know, if you want to give your thoughts, would you like to know my thoughts on this? Sometimes people are scared, because what are you worried about once you tell your story? What are you worried about? 100%. You're like, what do they think about me now? Right? Like, are they going to still be my friends? Are they going to treat me different? Like, they're saying they're my friend, but when I come to church, are they going to go, whoop, nope. Right? So don't make it weird. I don't know how to say that. Lean into it. Does that make sense? Even if it's uncomfortable, just be like, scoot over. I'm going to get uncomfortable with you. Right? Just lean into it with them.
Yeah, I think
part too is I had very consistent men in my life who were like these pillars for me, like that almost like I could filter my crazy through them. I could tell them these things and I could trust their counsel. And I think that was a good reason. People like Danny, people like Robert, all them. Yeah.
Does that, right? So if somebody looks at you and tells a story and then they're quiet afterwards, ask them, like, give them a minute, right? But ask them, do you want to know what I think? They're going to go, yeah. And then you need to reaffirm them, I still love you. What I think of you has not changed at all. I actually respect you a lot more. We do that in class. Why? Why do we do that? Because every time somebody gives a testimony, we all go around a circle and say, this is what I'm thinking about you. This is what I'm thinking about you. Because one, it gives people a chance to say it, but two, it dispels Satan's lies. Because Satan's going, you blew it. You're a freak. They all know it now. Freaking pervert. So no, you need to ask, do you want to know what I think? This is what I'm thinking. And be honest, be authentic, right? Don't flatter, because people all know. Yeah.
And I just felt like super overwhelmed because now I had like all these different people that I was meeting.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way with like this topic. Like if you have multiple scenarios, is there a way to like deal with one scenario at a time, or did it naturally just like all come up at once, like in the class?
Kind of both. You can focus. So like my main one was my dad. I was abused many more times than that. Many more. But he was kind of that foundational beginning. And then as I worked through the class, I was like, oh, and this one time, you know what I mean? It's like it just happens. But you can take your time and focus on, it all applies, but there's typically a foundational life-changing moment. Yeah, but it is overwhelming. It is. I wish I could change that part. But the cool thing is, the more overwhelmed you are, the more God stretches you and holds you and comforts you, and you know he's there. You know he's there. So just, yeah, embrace it. I'm so sorry. But I'm not, because it's really, this is what it feels like. Yeah, it doesn't feel good, but it's so good. And Wounded Heart class, who's ever taken it with me, we laugh a lot. We were like, that's weird. I'm like, I know, but I want to get a t-shirt that says, you think I'm funny? That's my trauma. That's what I want to get on it. Yeah. So I think we're out of time, right? So thank you guys so much. Thank you so much. Great job.